All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazy, O-Dog Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. How are we feeling on a Tuesday afternoon?
Not all right.
I think
the weather, I mean, I didn't, you know, the snow was a little bit much and the cold last night, but I think it felt good today. I was outside and it was
I'm kind of optimistic about it, Noodles, because in my head I'm like, there's another month and a half, and then it starts kind of getting into maybe I'm two or 3 weeks away from teeing it.
Well, I have a question.
Like, we're getting to February 1st, right?
It's once you get past January, you're in a very – like, January and February is the really difficult, disgusting months. Yeah, awful. Terrible. Yeah.
Well,
we're halfway home.
Exactly, and that's kind of what I was thinking, but – I have not heard, and I'm not sure, maybe because we haven't really gotten into it, but have you been hitting the slopes? Remember there was a time where you were like snowboarder extraordinaire?
Sean White, the agent version of Sean White up in Blue Mountain, Collingwood.
Yeah. Were
you? You know how that one goes, fellas. You know how that one goes.
I don't.
Kids get into it. You know, it's like family thing. Go and get the expensive membership. Guess what happens after that?
No one cares anymore.
Oh, it's just like, you know, you're getting ready. It's a Thursday or Friday. You send out. Me and my wife and my kids are on a group chat. Everybody fired up, snowboarding, skiing this weekend. Meh, no thanks. Everyone raised. Nah, it's too cold. I'm like, okay, good stuff, good stuff. We'll just, we'll hang.
Yeah, so you got to take advantage. I mean, golf season, we complain. But golf season's a good 7 months. Like, if you're willing to grind in the beginning of April through April, it might be wet, a little bit cold, and certainly early November to mid-November you can still play, and it's a grind.
Oh, yeah, 6 weeks the skiing stuff's over. It's
but that's
gone.
It with skiing. Like, if you get a mild December, you're talking like a month and a half, 2 months. If you don't take advantage of the skiing, then, because I'm trying to get into skiing again. I have not skied in a long time.
What do you mean you're trying to get into it? You said your wife took you once when you were dating and you hated it.
I did, but then eventually I developed an appreciation for it. I went back to the well and we kept going. And I went to Quebec City at one point. Like, you guys know this. We went to Mount St. Anne. Awesome. Like, mountain skiing is a different vibe. Like, I grew up going to, like, Earl Bales. If you're from Toronto, you know what Earl Bales is. Earl Bales is the equivalent of, you know, like a mini
a
park. Yeah, it's a hill.
There's a little ski hill at Centennial that's just like, I think it's a ski hill. Like, I think people go there, and it's like a hill. Like just...
this, you got to, anyone, please write in. If you're from Toronto, if you're familiar with Earl Bales, it's up in North York. They actually had, I don't think, it wasn't a chairlift, but they had like a rope. So, but this rope, you talk about a fire drill. Because it was all idiots from Toronto like myself who didn't know how to ski, you know, that would be trying to ski or snowboarding as kids, and then you'd be dragging yourself up, and people would be bringing toboggans. There was no one running the operation. Yeah, so it was a complete gong show. So that was my introduction into skiing. That lasted a couple times. My parents basically said, that's enough. Like, we're not doing this. But eventually I did get into it, but I have not been on skis since I had my first child. You know, we had our first child, and that was it. We just put the skis away. Blew my knee out a few years ago. That's my concern, is I get back out there and A, I suck again, or B, I blow out my knee, because I'm always concerned about that. Once you go under the knife the one time, you're kind of well aware that anything could be lurking on the horizon.
The reason I was talking to my builder this morning, and you know, we're just BSing, and I said, how things been going? He said, yeah, I just got back from a week at, is it Mount's? Tremblant, is that what it's called?
Mount Tremblant, yeah, that's outside of Montreal.
Yeah, and he said, you know, I make it a point to go with my family once a year, and he goes, the skiing is amazing, there's outdoor rinks, he said, like, just, you know, things like that. And he said, do you ski? And I have in my lifetime, but, you know, people don't know this, like, there are sports that you're not supposed to do when you're under an NHL contract. Skiing's one of them, right? Because you get injured skiing, technically, the team could have a leg to stand on to nullify your contract.
Why is that any different than any other sport, though? Like, if you're playing pickup basketball, you can blow your knee out. Why is that different?
But there are sports. I'm not 100% sure, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe there are certain things you're not supposed to be doing while you're under contract for, you know, in the NHL. For example, like, water skiing, you know, all of that.
I water skied every summer.
I know guys did that, did dirt biking or motorcycling. You know, like there were things that, honestly, if there, it might have been a loophole that has been closed now, where the players are like, "Yeah, I want to water ski in the summer. I want to."
It better be, because Instagram is loaded all summer with NHL players.
That's all they do. They get on those stupid surfboards and they're riding the waves.
Yeah. But it might be outdated what I'm talking about. But my point was, is I didn't ski for about 20 years, and I loved it. Like, I've been to, you know, Banff, Whistler, Sunshine, Aspen, Park City, some of the best ski hills, you would say, in North America. I haven't been, you know, overseas, but, and
so
I haven't
you've been there, but without skiing, is what you're saying. You have not actually been skiing at any of these places.
Before and after I've retired. That's the thing. Like, not while I was a pro player. So there was about 20 years where you're like, all right, I didn't get involved in that. I haven't gone to Earl Bales. I don't think it's next on my bucket list.
I really got to find out if Earl Bales is still cooking. I believe it's up Bathurst. It's just south of Finch, I want to say.
Right.
And I don't know if Earl Bales is still cooking. But, yeah, you know what? It actually did have a ski lift. I remember the rope. Maybe that's how much I sucked. That we were on, like, the main hill would have been a bunny hill at the worst ski resort in the country. You know,
right,
where the bunny hill at Earl Bales, you know, it'd take three or four steps to get up it now as an adult. But
right,
maybe that's the one I was taking with my sisters, and then we'd just take the rope all the way up top.
But it was
a gong show.
I just remember I played with this Russian player named Vladimir Malikov, who was an unreal defenseman, like one of the most skilled players I ever played with. Didn't have much of a pulse. Didn't speak to me the 3 years that I played with him, but he was a nice guy. Didn't, you know, the language was a bit of a barrier. I thought he got himself in some trouble with Montreal, wasn't it? Wasn't he having a knee injury or something, and he was out on the slopes?
He was in BC. He might have been at Tromblon, actually.
That was like pre-Instagram, pre-Twitter.
Right.
It's like, I think Patrice Breezeball might have also gotten in trouble in Montreal. It was just like, it was the big rumor. Oh, he was caught at the slopes, out with a knee injury or something, and caught at the slopes.
That's different, though. That's during the season when you're supposed to be rehabbing.
And
that's
if
ridiculous.
You're injured.
That's ridiculous.
That's the thing.
You're injured, exactly. You know, that's like an insurance violation. You know, like, that's, you're circumventing the contract in the CBA.
I told you, I played with a guy who missed a game with a foot injury. He was the first guy on the dance floor that night at the bar. I'm like, what's this guy doing? You know what I mean?
Stories.
The guy's out there cutting a rug.
Yeah.
Can't play tonight, but he's fine on the dance floor. Like,
those are the
stories. One of our favorites just texted me and said, in my contract, skydiving, skiing, and motorcycles out.
That makes sense. Could you imagine your GM seeing you snap a pic, you're about to jump out of a plane?
Yeah.
That would probably be something that they would. Although motorcycles.
Yeah, scary.
You know, yeah.
I had a hog in Carolina.
Of course you had a hog. Of course you had a hog. And you sold it a week later, rode it once.
How much did you lose on it? Be honest. How much money did you lose? Did you buy a Harley?
I had a Harley. It was Dyna Wide Glide. It was sick. I had it custom painted. I had custom
big, like the big, what is it called? Low, like the big
no,
handle.
No, I didn't have a Fat Boy. I wanted to get a Fat Boy, but Sean Hill always had a Fat Boy Harley. So I'm like, this is kind of cool. You know, I always thought it was cool when you were younger and the guys drove to the rink in the Harleys for practice in the summer or whatever. I'm like, I lived in North Carolina. I'm like, I'm getting a Harley. So I buy this Harley, and I don't know.
Do you have to get lessons? Like, I'm being serious. I've never been on a motorcycle before.
No, I would go to every time. I think I parked it in Sean Hill's garage, and I would just go over to his house, and we would just drive around his neighborhood until I got good at it. And then I knew a guy at the DMV or whatever, and I said, let me get a license. I came in, and he just frauded something, and he's like, you're good to go. And I had my Harley license.
That's what we need to hear.
You wore a leather jacket? You bought a leather jacket, didn't you? Something exclusive.
And one of those peanut
shell
helmets.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the one
shades.
Scary thing that made me get rid of the Harley. I had it in Muskoka, and I was driving from my parents' cottage to my cottage down on Lake Muskoka, and I was dating a girl, and she was on the back of the bike. And this massive turtle, it was black, it was dark out, and I just missed this massive turtle. And I thought to myself the whole way home, if I had to hit that turtle, I'm donezo, like it's game over.
Yeah.
So I said, that's it with the Harley.
Yeah, that's...
It is scary.
I've never been on one before. I've never... And I have no interest. Like, I'm not a... You know, sometimes... Some people are car people, right, motorcycle people. You know, you got some goal in life. This is something that I want to achieve. This is something I want to own. Never had that drive. I've just never cared to be on a motorcycle. I don't care to ride one. And for what you're saying, like riding around at dark, like at night in Muskoka in those back roads.
Wow.
That's
where it's
that's
like darker
ride
than usual. It's turtle, I swear to God, it was the size of a, it was massive, and I just missed it. And I'm like, that could have been game over. This thing's gone.
Yeah, you hit that thing. See you later.
And you have to be so skilled. Like I always envied people on motorcycles, but I get frustrated with them too, because you're on the 401 and you're going 120 and a guy bombs by you at like 180 and you were like, this
Noodles,
guy hits a
I've gone south
dust,
on the 400.
Oh yeah.
I have gone south on the 400. This is the God's honest truth. I've looked to my left and I've seen a guy on a like a ninja bike doing a wheelie going 200 kilometers an hour beside me. I looked the guy right in the eye and I had to start laughing. I'm like, look at this guy.
I know.
He was doing a wheelie at like 180 kilometers an hour.
Have you ever seen
something like that?
Yeah, I've seen it. You can hear it on the 401. Like if you're around the 401, you know how there are like I had a good buddy of mine growing up. He lived like just on the other side of the wall of the 401. So you could hear it. You could hear these things coming. They'd be 10 kilometers away flying. And you're like, I know what's coming. That guy's on a bike. He's going 180, and he's weaving in and out. And it's like hearing an airplane take off.
I don't know how those people that drive those bikes weaving in and out don't cause more accidents or don't kill themselves.
I have no idea either.
They're very skilled, but it for me personally, I'm a chicken. Like I know that I wouldn't be able to. I have a tough enough time on four wheels too. No way. Like I get frustrated, you know, because I get nervous for those people. You always, you know, somebody on a bike goes bombing by you 180. You come around a corner, you keep expecting to see them laying there, you know, like side of the road.
Well, you do. Yeah, you see it every year, like when it becomes like bike season and motorcycles are coming out for the first time, you know, for the first time in 3 or 4 months, and guys are, you know, people are raring to go and they're flying.
Right.
And it's it is. So there you go. We've learned a lot this week. We're into Tuesday. We're not even 4 hours into the week in terms of show content. And
we've had an agent, business cards made.
We've got a Harley. We've got everything cooking. We're gonna do a little pop quiz at the end of the week. We'll bring someone in and quiz them on what they've learned. But we got Eric Stahl that's gonna join us in about 10 minutes, and his name had been attached to the men's Canadian team for a while, right? Like he wants to play again, and he a couple weeks ago went down to Iowa, played a few games just to give it a test run, and he's over there. So the Canadian team has been announced, and there's a lot of names people will be familiar with. I had to go back and look it up because this is the nature of the beast with the NHL players not going. I didn't remember what happened in 2018. I remember Russia won. I remember Kovalchuk playing. They weren't named Russia. They were, what were they, the representatives of Russia, or the Olympic athletes from Russia, whatever the hell that means. They won it. Germany actually was in a gold medal game. They finished second with the silver. Canada won the bronze in 2018. And I didn't remember that.
I did not remember that.
But with Eric Stahl going, our buddy Landon Ferraro is going to be a part of the team, which is really, really cool. I was talking with Ray today. He's so excited, as he should be. And there's some kids going, which I think makes it intriguing as well. Owen Power is going to be there and Mason McTavish.
I have no idea why they're going. I got to be honest with you. I'm looking at it from kind of a futuristic type look and from an agent perspective. And for the, like, I have no idea why Owen Power, who's won a world championship. He was just at the juniors. He's number one overall. He's going to play for 15 to 20 years in the NHL and be a stud. I don't know why he wants to go over there. I don't even know if he signed his entry level deal yet.
No, because he's still in college. He can't.
He hasn't. That's why he's eligible to play. I think this is, personally, I look at it the other way. I think this is fantastic for him.
He going to get out of it, Noodles? Winning a gold medal is everything. But
that's what I'm saying. If he wins gold, and for some reason 4 years from now the NHLers aren't going again because there is something that comes up, like this is a once in a lifetime thing for some of these players. And you know, I get it, I mean, I'm looking at some of the names, and, you know, they may not be household names, but it is pretty cool. Like, I know Adam Cracknell. He's an unbelievable person. I'm so happy for him. You know, oh, you know Eric Staal. The guy's a salt of the earth. Their whole family is. And you know, it would be nice for him. I'd like to see Eric Staal parlay that into an NHL job down the stretch.
Right.
But some of these guys will have no sniff of ever playing a National Hockey League game. This is their Stanley Cup. This is their opportunity, you know, for a hard-fought career, and you've grinded it out in the minors or grinded it out in Europe. You know, for example, Edward Pasquale, like, he's a pretty good goaltender. He's been really good in the KHL. Hasn't been able to kind of crack through at the National Hockey League level. If he never plays an NHL game again, like, and he wins a gold, I think, you know, good for him. I
Absolutely.
Know what you're saying, but I kind of look at it as, there might be one or two storylines that come out of here and somebody gets an NHL job out of it. Like, hey, this guy was really good at the Olympics. We'll give him a chance. Maybe he slid through the cracks.
Well, if everything goes the way it is planned to go, based on his draft status and based on him going first overall, maybe Owen Power is back there in 4 years with the NHL players. Like, maybe he represents the Drew Doughty role of 2010, when Doughty was there as a young player. Like, that would suggest he's got to get to the NHL next year, get in, get his feet wet, establish himself, and become one of the top eight Canadian defensemen. But he's on pace to do that based on his status, based on the scouting reports, and him being a first overall talent. And what he did at the World Championships last year, and what he was doing early into the tournament at the World Juniors. So, you know, it could be another – there's some politicking as well with Hockey Canada. You know, what have you done for us in the past? Have you been a good soldier? Have you been someone that's shown up? And it's something that they'll take into consideration into the future.
That is a part of it. Like, you have to be – I can remember, because every time I got asked to go to the World Championships, I was like, I just played in the NHL. I'm beating out of the playoffs, or I didn't qualify for the playoffs. I'm kind of gutted right now. I don't have it in me. And you hear all the stories. It's like, you're proud Canadian, but you hear all the stories of the guys going over there, and it's not exactly that serious. They're Canadians. They're going to play hard. They're going to play for the gold or whatever, but it's basically party time over there and see what happens. And I had my best year ever, and the summer camp kind of training camp came around for Team Canada. I'm like, I'm going to get invited to this. It's just a summer camp, and I didn't even get a sniff. I was like top four or five guys for goals for Canadians, and it was like, don't even think about it.
Right. And you think that was because of your history with?
Oh, for sure, because every time. I had to tell Lanny McDonald. Lanny McDonald called me, and he's like, I want you to, you know, come to Toronto. We'll get on a flight. And I'm just like, Lanny, I ain't going, man. He's like, it was hard to do, but I was like, I ain't going over there.
It is. They, unless you are, you know, the best players in the world, like, they keep track. They keep track of who turns them down and all of that. You know, I wouldn't say they're vindictive, but there is, if there's a coin flip between two players and one guy has gone to the World Championships, he's done everything he could to be a part of the, you know, Team Canada family, and the other one has turned him down and, you know, kind of thumbed their nose at certain situations, then, you know, who do they go with? Like, that's, I do believe they keep a scorecard. I really do believe that.
Oh, yeah. I think for the, you're right, I mean, it doesn't matter if Sid's coming or going,
exactly.
Or David's coming
exactly.
or going. Clearly, I mean, there are guys at the top that are, it's natural, and there would be a revolt across the country if they decided not to put them on because of politics or because of past history. But I think you're right. Ty would go to the person or the player that competed in the past, that showed up when they needed them in the past, whether it's at the World Championships or here at the Olympic Games. So we'll catch up with Eric Staal in about 10 minutes. The Shapovalov-Nadal match last night, I went to bed after the second set. I was still up. I stayed up. He's down 2-love. I'm like, all right, it's over. Wake up in the morning, and the headline is Nadal survives Shapo. I'm like, how is this possible? So he battles back in the third and fourth set, and Nadal beats him in the fifth. Now, this is Nadal's tournament. Now, you can feel it around the world. I can only imagine the vibe in Melbourne, because Djokovic isn't there and Federer's not there. So there's three guys that own the sport. There's three guys that everyone pulls for, or everyone's attracted to, and two of them aren't there. And it's weird to read it. Federer's recovering from knee surgery. Djokovic was deported. Like, that's his injury report is deportation, not available for the tournament.
Yeah, but you know the fan base down there, and any fan of tennis is like, this, as far as popularity, TV, all of it, they want Nadal to push through, unless you're in Canada and you want Shapo or a guy like that to go through.
Absolutely. And the stats going against Shapovalov after he lost the first set, overwhelming. After he lost the second set, even more overwhelming. I saw Chris McKendry of ESPN tweet this out, that Nadal is 263-7 when winning the first set in a major, 231-2 when winning the first two sets. So it was effectively over after the second, but an incredible perseverance from Shapovalov. But he was showing his emotion throughout the match, and especially after the first game of the second set. He wasn't happy. He's chirping the ump, and this is what he had to say. Now, the umps, I'll bet you have a history with him as well. They're not probably his biggest fan. But this is what he had to say about Nadal and the treatment that Shapovalov believes he gets that others don't.
I respect everything that Rafa's done, and I think he's an unbelievable player. But, you know, there's got to be some boundaries, some rules set, and it's so frustrating as a player. You know, you feel like you're not just playing against the player, you're playing against the umpires, you're playing against, you know, so much more.
So those are strong accusations. And he went into further depths. He believed that Nadal was getting too much time, that Nadal was effectively pushing the limits of, you know, taking breaks, injury breaks, service, you know, time, et cetera, et cetera. And he was showing his emotion. And after he lost, he slammed his racket off the ground, and he was pissed. He wasn't happy.
Yeah, but guess what? He can bitch and complain, and I'm happy that he did to stand up for himself and the competition. Everybody else that goes against the guy or one of the top end guys, it's garbage. It's nonsense. And trust me, in somehow, some way, I know that, because when you play for the Carolina Hurricanes and Eric Lindros and Mark Messier and the New York Rangers, or Lindros and Gretzky or whatever, they roll into town, it's just like you're not even a part of the equation sometimes, it feels like. And it's just like, what the hell's going on here? How come we didn't get that penalty call? A little half trip or something? It's always called against the best players. And when you're Joe Schmo and you're playing in Carolina, it doesn't seem fair, man.
I totally agree.
It seems like you have no chance.
Yeah, and I can't sit here and say there are people that cover him exclusively, clearly, but I haven't seen every match Rafa Nadal has played, and I can't attest to all of these infractions. But I am a sports historian in a way, to the extent that everything you just said I think is accurate. Absolutely, he would get preferential treatment.
Of course.
The problem is that's not going to change. You know, but I do appreciate Shapovalov saying it. Now, I hope it doesn't hurt him, but he's an independent contractor. He doesn't have to worry about his team, his coach, or whatever. He's stepping up and saying, I don't like it. This is what I'm seeing. I guarantee you he's not alone. You know, on tour, they're all talking about it.
You don't think Tiger Woods in his heyday had kind of some questionable rules, the rules official just walked over and was like, go ahead and move it, or go ahead and hit it, whatever. Like, I guarantee you that's happening.
Definitely preferential, you know, tee times or whatever it's going to be. But that's just your reality. Nadal is the legend.
Star power, man. That's
the legend.
He's going to get it.
Yeah, like, he's going to get it.
He's not getting any, like, I understand and I respect that he's standing up for himself, but that was the equivalent. His chirping last night is equivalent of him smashing the ball at a judge's face, too. Because you know what? Like, you don't think the judges hear that and go, oh, this guy really wants to complain about us now?
You're calling the integrity of the umps,
exactly,
for sure, and the rules officials.
Like, I get it. I love the guy's fire. I think he's grown into like a powerful man. Like, just watching him from afar, I love it. And I don't mind the pushback, but I don't know what would come out of this in a positive way for him. That's what concerns me.
Well, I don't know if this rolls over to a match against anyone else, but because I do think it's exclusively about the relationship against Nadal, and I would guess other players on tour will have an appreciation for this, because especially in a tournament like this, when Djokovic isn't there and Federer is not there, Nadal's the king. Like, this whole tournament revolves around Nadal, and if he wins it, then he breaks the record and he stands alone. He's the first one at 21. And he leaves Djokovic and Federer in his dust. So everything is about Nadal. He could get away with anything. They're never going to kick him out of the, you know, they're not going to penalize him to a point where it's really detrimental.
It's like inside everyone's subconscious mind that he is the best player and he is going to get to the finish line. And it's almost like in your subconscious you kind of help along the way. You want to take a little more time and a break, go ahead, I don't care.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Because
Jerome's not going to penalize him. It's Rafa Nadal.
Because I always thought, would a referee, when like my buddies would say, oh, the refs threw that game, nobody would ever in their right mind in professional sports go down there and talk to referees and say, you know what, throw this one tonight, give all the penalties to Carolina. That doesn't happen. But sometimes subconsciously you're like, oh, that's the best player in the league. Got to call that penalty, blah, blah, blah. And it just, that's the way it happens. That's how greatness kind of morphs into this animal that's bigger than everybody else and you can't stop it.
Look at the shock over the weekend when Brady actually got flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah.
Like that just.
Or how many calls, Hayes, in big games have you seen Tom Brady get the pass interference call where other quarterbacks are like, are you kidding me? I never get that call. Tom Brady was the master of that in the last 20 years. Big play, he would throw it deep, and he'd get the pass interference call every damn time.
Yeah, or snap, plant the seed for unnecessary roughness or roughing the passer.
Damn right.
Or just lose his mind on an official, and they're like, I'm not flagging this guy. That's why it was outrageous that that happened over the weekend, when I think he had a legitimate case. Von Miller, the crown of his helmet, got him. He was bloodied. But, yeah, I think I like Shapovalov's fire. He plays with passion. He's a lot like Nadal in that fashion. They're both lefties. They're both emotional on the court. They both play with fire. And, you know, he's disappointed. He storms back. He thought he had a chance probably to beat him, and it doesn't happen. And
Scotty Hart from TSN said Shapo's antics were embarrassing.
Doesn't like it. Well, I don't have a problem with it because, you know, I get it after you've lost the match. You can be labeled it's a loser, sore loser, and that's a legend, and you're not paying the necessary respect to Nadal. But these three guys have dominated for 20 years. Someone's got to battle them. You know, like, don't just go. And if you think it's the umps that are hurting you, then fight that angle if you have to, because, you know, they've had their success. You can't just constantly pamper them or pump their tires. And he's always respectful of Nadal, but this wasn't as much about Nadal as it was about the umps and the calling of the match. We'll get into it more later this afternoon. Mike Johnson just after 5 o'clock. We're waiting on Cooperstown. Everyone's wondering, will Clemens and Bonds get in? This is the last year on the writer's ballot. We'll touch on that later this afternoon. Confirm or deny around 6:05. Catch up with Eric Stahl. His take on going to Beijing. What does he expect out of it? Not his first rodeo. He was there in 2010. He won the Olympic gold in 2010. So we'll catch up with him as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, in about half an hour. Catch up with Eric Stahl here in just a moment. In fact, I caught up with him a little bit earlier today. He's flown into Switzerland. They'll start practices tomorrow. The men's team has been announced, and it's getting close. The Olympic Games are right around the corner. Sean Payton pulling the pin in New Orleans. He's done. He's going to step aside or step down. So I do think
is somebody going to throw at that guy?
That's the thing, right? It's not an official retirement. It's I'm stepping down and taking a step back, which I believe means he'll be somewhere else in like a
year.
And
at the end of his comment, he said, I did phone Drew Brees this year, by the way, to see if he would come back. And I thought that was a telling part of his last little comment there, because he was like, we can't win with what we got here in New Orleans with this quarterbacking situation. I want to just say I'm stepping away. If someone's going to offer this guy the Gruden contract, man, he'll get $100 million.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people point to Dallas, where he's got an affiliation with them. I mean, there's so many different spots.
Dude, some teams, he's one of those guys where I think someone would fire their coach just to get him.
I totally agree. He's had a great run. Look at how good the Saints have been. And if you give him a quarterback, which would apply to a lot of coaches, you give them a superstar Hall of Fame quarterback like Drew Brees, they're going to look really good. But this year, they almost made the playoffs. They went into Week 18 with a chance of making the playoffs, and they didn't get in because the Niners won. But with Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston was injured for half the season. But you're right. You lose Drew Brees, and it's packing up shop. See you later. So we'll get to that in about an hour, confirmed tonight just after 6 o'clock. So caught up with Eric Stahl, and he's off to Beijing. He's going to be there for Team Canada. He was on the taxi squad in 06. Played in 2010, so he's got a gold medal. He's a part of the Triple Gold Club, which I've never understood because it includes the cup, which is not gold. The Triple Gold Club.
I thought Triple Gold was World Juniors, World Championships, Olympics.
No, my understanding is it's cup, World Championship, Olympics. And then if you add on the fourth, which is the World Juniors, then you're talking Scott Niedermeyer and Corey Perry. That's about it. Like, there aren't many. I think Sid got it. Didn't Sid get it? Yeah, I believe he did because he went to the World Championships and won one. There's only a handful of guys who have done all four.
Right.
But, I don't know why the cup is included in the triple gold. But anyway, Eric Stahl's in that territory. He's been a great player for a long time. And caught up with him earlier and asked him about the process and how it got to this point. Him not playing in the NHL this season, his name has been attached to this team for quite some time. So we asked him to take us through the process, how it got to a point where Eric Staal was announced as a part of Team Canada today.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of a process of a lot of different things, I guess. First and foremost, me not playing anywhere, skating on my own to stay in shape and, you know, see if there's something that came about. And then the fact that, you know, NHL isn't going to the Olympic Games, you know, the thought that, hey, maybe I can be a part of something that's pretty special and pretty unique. And I got a call from Shane and he was asking my thoughts and if I was interested and, you know, where I was at physically and mentally and all those things. So kind of started jumping through hurdles and taking steps. And obviously last week went down to Iowa and played some games in the American League and came out okay, felt good and felt body felt good, and I'm excited for this chance now, this opportunity to represent our country. It's a special thing. It's an awesome event. There's something special just about the Olympic Games in general, and you know, for me to get this chance, I'm looking forward to it, and we'll kind of see where it leads after that. But right now, my focus is this group, and I'm trying to win gold medal.
So was this always kind of the plan, or were you sitting living the retired dream in November and then just kind of got off the couch one day and said, you know what, I think I still got more to offer? Or how did it all go down? Was this always the plan?
Well, I mean, it was always my plan, to be honest, to play at some point this year. I didn't know it would be in the Olympic Games. My plan was to still play. I mean, I still have the itch and the desire and want to play. There's, you know, I talked to a couple different teams, but nothing that anyone was ready to commit and make a decision over with me. So I stayed in shape and kept skating. I got three boys are all practicing, and so I've been at their hockey and coaching and doing all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, still have a little itch, you know, still itch to play. And then, you know, when this came about and this opportunity was out there, I you know, obviously talked with the family first, and everyone was fired up and on board and pumped for this chance, and you know, I'm excited for it and the opportunity to go. It's a great chance, and Team Canada is always a special time and always first class in everything they do. So you know, I'm just excited to kind of be a part of this group and these guys and see what we can do.
Eric, if you take a look at your last, let's call it calendar year of just life, and then you throw hockey in there. We talked to you, I mean, just coming when you just got to Montreal. So it's, you're in Buffalo. Things didn't go so well for the team. Guys that had COVID, there was injuries, inconsistencies. All of a sudden, you blink, you're in a Stanley Cup final. And then, you know, fast forward, you're playing in the AHL to get your game going. Now you're in the Olympics. Did you envision your last year to be this kind of, I guess we'll call it high event for your career?
No, not at all. I mean, it's, you know, when you kind of like read it out and you think about it that way, it's one of those things. It's just amazing what this game can bring your way and what it can do. And, you know, obviously, you know, my goal as a kid and as a player was always be in the NHL and win a Stanley Cup. And that's been my dream and goal every year since I was able to skate and, knew the game. And, last year, obviously, you know, getting to Montreal, not knowing, you know, what to expect and the COVID, the shutdown with that team, just the, there's so many things that, that the hurdles that kind of personally went through and then to get all the way to the finals with that group was phenomenal. So special and, you know, memory that I'll have forever. And then, you know, you turn around and 2 weeks later free agency opens and you're like, okay, well maybe there'll be an opportunity somewhere. And it just hadn't worked out for me. And you just go day by day. I mean, like anybody in this day and age and with, we're dealing with daily, you just kind of take it day by day and you deal with it and you keep going. And now here I am in Davos, Switzerland with Team Canada and looking forward to the Olympic Games. So Hey, this is a crazy game and something that I'm grateful to be able to do and I still love to do. So my goal is to help this team and try and win a gold medal. And, you know, it starts with a big practice tomorrow.
We're chatting with Eric Staal, who was named to Team Canada today, so he'll be heading over to Beijing. And you are an exclusive club on that team. You already have a gold medal. And the one that you won was one of the great, you know, achievements in Canadian hockey history. That was back in 2010 in Vancouver. And I'm curious how, you know, if a teammate comes up to you tomorrow and goes, can you brace me for what I'm walking into? How you can compare, you know, Vancouver and everything that was to what you're probably walking into here. No NHL competition in terms of the players going over there. Beijing, it sounds like it's going to be very different in terms of clearly the experience with COVID and the reaction to it all. I don't know, people in the stands, et cetera, the Canadian media. So can you use that experience from 2010 and apply it to 2022? How do you intend on doing that?
Well, I mean, I think there's always moments where experience helps and counts. I mean, I do now, having been part of two Olympic Games. I was in 06. I was on the taxi squad, so it was kind of a real young, kind of just having my eyes open and watching how guys took care of themselves and prepared. And then in 2010, obviously being a part of it and being out there at the end. There's always moments in any event where, you know, if you've been there before, there's things that you can use to your advantage as far as experience goes with other guys and maybe make it seem more at ease for them, you know, more easier to understand with certain things and how things are done and whatnot. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about getting on the ice and competing you know, being at your best as a team and, you know, coming together. And I think that's our main focus and that's my focus being here with this team and this group is trying to get us all to gel and you know, have those vibes to carry us all the way to the championship game because that's, you know, why we're going and what we're striving for. And, you know, it's always moments in time as you move to say something or to, you know, to lean on something that you've had happen before, but also you get to experience it new again. So it's going to be fun. I'm just looking forward to the chance with this group.
So you go to the Olympics for yourself, Staley. What happens after that? You're going to hope that somebody calls you and says you want to play the rest of the year, or how does that go down?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, for sure. Hopefully I light it up and we come back with some hardware and someone says, hey, that guy would look pretty good in our lineup to finish the year and go for a run in the playoffs, and I'd be all in. That's kind of my thought right now. If that's not the case and it doesn't happen the way I'm wanting in my head, then that's fine too. I'm okay with, you know, like I said before, it's, you know, you take it day by day, that's life, and you move forward. But, you know, right now, this is a great opportunity and a great chance that up, and you know, grateful that they're giving me this chance with this group and some of these young guys. It's going to be really fun and special, and you know, we'll see what happens after, but right now you know, I'm going to worry about this group and go from there.
Well, we're all pulling for you guys, you know that. I mean, the whole country's going to be on board. We look forward to seeing what you guys have in store. Good luck at practice tomorrow and the drive towards Beijing, and it's going to be a fun ride. So enjoy it, and I'm sure we'll catch up when you get back home. Thank you for this.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Good talking to you, and we'll try and get her done.
There he is, Eric Staal. He's heading over there to the Olympic Games, and obviously he just told us he wants to play. He wants to be in the NHL, and he's hoping to use this as a platform to get back into the league. So, you know, I wouldn't put anything past him. He's a seasoned
vet.
He
has a good tournament. Somebody will call him.
For sure.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Like, I mean, here's a guy who's been and seen everything, done everything in the league. He's, you know, keeps himself in good shape. You know, he had a decent run for the Habs last year. He's really serviceable in a lot of different areas. You know, he's a grizzled vet. Like, I think teams that are looking for depth and for quality people to bring in their organization.
No kidding. He's a great fit, Noodles. He's a fourth-line guy right now in his particular career, but he can take faceoffs, win draws in your own zone. He can probably run a second power play unit. There's some value there for a team that needs some depth.
That's the key. He's going to be a valuable player that is going to be on a very low impact contract. He's going to sign the Corey Perry, you know, that type of deal, and add to the depth of your organization. Because if you go deep in the playoffs, what do we always say? There's injuries, inconsistencies, and stuff. Your depth gets challenged at some point. And that's a guy who can add to it. I think there's, you know, if he has a good tournament and shows people he can still play, he had 5 points in 4 games in Iowa in the minors. I was kind of tracking before he went over. So he's showing people that he can still, you know,
he's
contribute.
Not that old. He's 36.
37. Yeah.
Yeah, 37. Like he's, you know, Joe Thornton's still kicking around, not playing a lot, but Spez is older than him. There are guys in the league.
Right.
Corey Perry's his age. They're both 85 birthdays. So
I think Corey Perry's got 12 goals.
Yeah, Perry's
11 or 12.
Like fit in, I would say, pretty well down there in Tampa. That's a good spot to be right now. Mike Johnson in about 20 minutes, confirm or deny later this afternoon. Dallas Braden will join us on if he believes, as a former player, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens should be going to Cooperstown.
And
we'll find out today.
And after the break, Hazy, I'm going to tell you about our first official offer that we've gotten for springtime.
I love it, and I'm looking forward to it. A full vetting of that. We'll break it all down. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
So, Hazy, I don't know if you can turn back the clock and put your memory bank on, but we played a couple guys, Simone and Perrick, at my course at Weston. They're both better than us. You got like 8 shots, and you had a chance to win the whole thing on 18. You had like a 4 or 5 footer, and you ultimately choked, and we tied. But Simone was sniffing around yesterday saying he was talking to his partner and they would like a rematch when things thaw out.
Oh, absolutely. Lock it in. I mean, that was – I did not have my best stuff that day, admittedly. It was not – Weston chewed me up. I did not have fun. And I buckled.
That's, I think you got a new game now. You've been out of club for a year. You're a new member. You know the deal.
Yeah. Was that 2 years ago? That might have been – was that on the first tee when I chunked the drive and you got it on vid? I think that
might have been. Might have been. We took a, we ended up sawing the match, but you had a chance to win it.
That, well, 18, I hate 18 because I hate the downhill approach. I never clock it out properly. It was in my head and got away from me. But, yeah, 100%, lock that in. Lock it in. Anyone that wants a piece of the boys, you know we're in. Like, we're – it's go time, man. It's go time. I can see February around the corner. Look at the golf tournaments. We're at the Farmers. We got Torrey Pines this week. It starts tomorrow. We got to make our picks this afternoon.
Dude, there's like 9 Canadians or something in that tournament. It's awesome to see.
Most ever, I thought I saw today.
Awesome.
The most
awesome
since 1970
to see.
Or something like that. A lot of Canadians. And the President's Cup, Mackenzie Hughes, I think, is 4th in terms of the internationals, and Corey Connors is 10th. I think we're going to have 2 Canadians at the President's Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there have been Canadians that have been in it clearly in the past, but there's a chance you're going to get those 2. And, you know, there's a couple of other Canadians kind of knocking on the door, making some noise. So
I was checking out Graham Dillette's golf kind of hockey DB golf page, and he was playing in a match against Phil and Keegan Bradley, and GD chipped in on 18 to win the match against those two. We got to ask him about that the next time we talk to him.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
At Muirfield Village, dude. He was awesome. He played unbelievable in that President's Cup.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they've been promoting it for about 7 years.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable.
Dude, as soon as the Ryder Cup was on, it was just the commercials with Davis Love and Immelman were everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And Immelman, I guess, works for the Golf Channel, so that I don't think that that's why they're promoting it. Clearly, it's going to be on NBC. But, yeah, we got to get to our Farmers picks. We'll do that in the next hour, I guess, a couple of hours. And John Rahm's just chirping, man. You see him carving up the American Express, and he was caught on a hot mic chirping the course. And then I guess he came out and said he just didn't like the setup of the course, and he wants more difficult courses.
Okay, buddy, don't go. There's
exactly
different courses for different horses. Don't show up. There's no sense of going. And the head of the PGA Tour is probably so pissed at him. It's like, don't show up. We don't need the negative chat.
Right. Like, American Express is a massive, massive tournament, huge field, and it's a big sponsor. And it's easy for you to say. You're the number one player in the world, of course.
And Graham Dillette said that when we talked to him. He's like, it's a putting contest. We all know that. So if you don't like it, don't show up.
Don't play it. Exactly. Yeah. Don't play it.
That's the thing, though. If you're the number one player in the world, you should be able to pick and choose, you know, like, and you don't like it. Like, for me, I think, is it money or is it just status? Like, why would you choose to go?
I don't know if he's got some sort of sponsorship deal that he's got to be there. I'm not sure. You know, it's a quick turnaround. You go there, then you go to Torrey Pines. He's in the tournament this weekend. No one goes to the Pro-Am anymore. Like, no one will be at Pebble next week, or a few guys will be there, but not big names. I don't know. I guess it's just it's on the sked. You pick up FedEx points. You try to win. There's a lot of cash on the line. Yeah, but what are you going to do? I mean, tournaments are played where they're played, and some courses work for some guys. Some don't work for others, but that's Rom. Like, he'll speak his mind. I give him credit. He'll speak his mind, but he's been a hothead throughout his career, and he was in contention over the weekend. It's not like he missed the cut, but he was just rattled, I guess, the way it was set up. So we'll get to our Farmers picks a little bit later on. Mike Johnson in about 10 minutes, his take on a number of things going on throughout the NHL, including a big game tonight, Edmonton and Vancouver. So we got that game we'll look forward to. The Leafs are back in action with Anaheim in town tomorrow. We'll get back into that. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.